Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Happy Monday, everybody, and happy early Thanksgiving to everybody out there, at least in the United States, that is. Today, I'm very excited to have Jan Robinson on the show with us. Jan is a 21st century feminist beat poet. Her voice haunts with the legacy of early feminists and poets such as Gloria Steinem, Charles Bukowski, and Jack Kerouac. Her no-sugar shit prose, with the honesty and simplicity of Bukowski and the romantic reliability of Kerouac. Her poetry leads like a woman, walking with fire in the footprints of Steinem, breathing sexual liberation, choice, and overall championing of women to their birthright of not only equality, but leadership. Robinson notoriously states that her career is to share slabs of her heart for a living. Her ability to capture the human experience with unrefined sincerity makes her an incredible force in the modern landscape of personal expression. Her loyal following of enthusiasts on social media are there not only for her brutal honesty and lyrical grace, but also for her lifestyle, which is a mirror of her devotion to joy and refusal to work, to work, to work, to die. Robinson's films and art shit on the societal shoulds and norms and encourage people to build their own box. She is an outrageous idealist and master at effortlessly mirroring the life she wishes to have with her work. And this enrages and inspires many who believe they are trapped. Robinson's foray into directing in the multimedia world was in directing a spoken word poetry film in New York City involving 18 women reading the lines from her poem, "This is for the women who don't give a fuck." The film was a viral sensation online and was nominated for the 2016 Cannes Corporate Media and TV Awards. Jan is very much so crowning at the beginning of what is and will be a triumphant career, and she has begun so with the hearts of millions of indebted and watching, as it is rare to stumble upon a woman who makes revolution nature. Jan, thank you so much for joining us today.
That is a hell of a bio.
I know, I'm out of breath. I need a sip of water. It's pretty impressive,
I just wrote that for my book. It's the first time I've heard it out loud. That's beautiful. Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here as well.
Yeah, it's so great. So your book is coming out very shortly. And in fact, I think it's by the same name of your poem, which is "This is for the Women Who Don't Give a Fuck," correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I, one of the first poets that I read, and kind of why that's there, is Charles Bukowski. I had a friend who gave me one of his books of poems, and I fell in love with how honest and shocking it was. And it was very simple. I know that when I was in school, you'd read like Shakespeare and all of these, you know, poets where they were saying large grandiose words, and you never had really any idea what they were saying, and you didn't understand it. And what I loved about Bukowski was it was like, you know, he'd talk about racetracks and balls and prostitutes, and it was shocking, but it was also like you knew that he was talking about racetracks or, you know, balls or prostitutes. So I loved that. And so he also would title his books of poems often as a title of one of his poems. And you know, "This is for the Women Who Don't Give a Fuck," I wrote it in like a ferry parking lot probably 2 or 3 years ago. And it was about this, it started being about this woman who was a makeup artist and a single mom and a stylist and a photographer who came on this, shoot with us to Mexico. I was an extra in a music video about gender equality. And I was just so in awe of her and all of these kick-ass women and entrepreneurs in my life. And so I wrote this poem as like an anthem and a mantra to like the woman that I aspire to be in this world and in business and in personal and love, as well as what I saw around me and what kind of lit a fire inside of me. And it has over 1 million views, and people have continued to like love it and go crazy for it. And yeah, so it was a really organic and natural choice. And you know, swearing wakes people up and makes them pay attention. So there's also that.
Yeah, it's not often that I get to say fuck on the air, and normally it's something that you're like, ooh, can she say that? Well, yes, the lucky thing is, you know, I think because we're not on a regulated show that you can say things like fuck on the radio and not get in trouble for it. But I think it's, you know, very... what's the word I'm looking for? It's very forward thinking, but it's also very radical, I guess, is the word I'm looking for, to throw it out there in today's society and to say something like that. And that's what really drew me to you, is we didn't know each other and you didn't come via a publicist. I remember reading an article that somebody, I think, had tagged me in an article that you had written on Facebook. And I immediately posted, I said, my God, I want to have her on the show. I love what this woman has to say, because it's just, it flies in the face of, you know, modern conformity.
I think, well, that's exactly it. And you know what's funny is my, you know, a lot of bookstores probably won't carry my book because I haven't starred the word fuck. and for me, I was like, the whole book is about non-conforming. If I star the word fuck, I'm doing the absolute opposite of what my message is. And I understand, but I also, I'm definitely, I am a non-conformist, and that is what the poem and the book is about.
So were you always a nonconformist, or was this something, you know, did you used to conform and then you grew so sick of it that you thought, well, screw the traditional world, I'm just going to get out there and become a famous poet? Or did you conform for a while?
I was raised by two gay moms, and my mom, she met my other mom, Jackie, when I was in grade four. So for the first couple of years of my life, it was her. And she is a loud, amazing, empathetic, flat. She's a feminist, but she's like loving and sweet. And she would volunteer at like women and children abuse shelters. And I grew up seeing empowerment embodied through my mother. And she was also traveled all over the world. I was conceived, like, she met my dad in India, and they, you know, lived in a cave. And like, I had it. So she was, my mom traveled all over the world, and she like lived in this little cabin in the Yukon when she was 20, and like, you know, worked this gas station, and she just had these two big bush dogs and lived by a fire and read books and told people not to visit unless she asked them to come. So, my mama paved my way. The second I turned 18, there was no question of like, should I go to school? It was like, go see this world and figure out who you are, and then make a choice from that place. So I went and I traveled, and I think that, you know, so many people have shame around taking a year off, or, you know, they have to call it a gap year. But it's like, I view university and post-secondary as a tool that is great to utilize in certain ways. But I personally haven't been, and I love working. I've worked under some amazing filmmakers and mentors that have been my piece of paper. And I'm very grateful to have a mother who didn't impose, university, or, you know, you should get this career, who's just always been there cheering for me on the sidelines, no matter what I'm doing, no matter how crazy it is. And there's this book called The Great Works of Your Life, which covers stories of, you know, Jane Goodall and all of these other people. And it's so monumental to have parents who encourage you, especially when you're an artist and you're doing something that people don't think that you can achieve or be a success at or make a living off, because that's our belief systems, right? It's like, if we have someone who's constantly telling us you can't do it, or you need to get this 40-hour-a-week job, it's really defeating and discouraging, and we often don't move forward believing in ourselves. And, you know, Jane Goodall's mom was like living in a shack in the jungle in like the mid, I don't know if there's a documentary that came out about her. And it's vital. It's vital for our belief in ourselves, which is what we need to succeed and to walk forward with confidence and grace. And I always had that. So no, I've never, and you know, so I grew up with two gay moms, so I was also very open to human rights and gay rights and women's equality. And so it was always like, you know, have kids if you want to, or buy a house if you want to, but there's never been any pressure. There's been the opposite, actually. So I'm very grateful for the upbringing that I've had.
So I'm going to ask you a question. You know, coming from a more traditional family myself, would you say that you were able to have the level of success you've reached already because of your lack of structure and your ability just to kind of do it all? Or do you think that somebody who comes from a more nuclear family would still be able to reach the same level of success in some sort of artistic or passion endeavor not having had that same environmental nurture and upbringing? Do you think that's possible?
I think that outside of whether it's conservative or liberal, I guess it just depends on the beliefs of people who are conservative or liberal. I think that in my world, there are no ceilings. I think we put ceilings on what we believe we are able to achieve in our lives. And both through my mother and some really incredible mentors have I seen that, like, ceilings seriously don't exist. And but yeah, I think it just depends. I think you could have a super conservative parent who could still really, really cheer on their children. I do think that sometimes, yeah, you have to have an open mind. And sometimes I associate being conservative with like a closed-minded or a rigid way of thinking, but I'm sure there's all kinds of people that break that rule.
Yeah, it's funny because I meet all different types and walks of people in my life and around the world. I just came back from Nepal last week. And, you know, again, culturally, they couldn't wrap their heads around the fact. We did like a gender discussion where the men of the village and the women of the village had the opportunity to ask us questions and vice versa. And the locals couldn't understand that I'm a woman in my late 30s and I don't have children and I'm married. Mm. And they just couldn't even culturally wrap their heads around that. And it's funny because even in America, I feel like there are things that we see as the acceptable norm and things that are unacceptable. And I feel like the more that we break some of these norms and these traditions and these cultural things that we think have to be a certain way, the more we have access to everything and anything, because it's only when we box ourselves, like you talk about in your bio, about getting people outside of that box, you create your own box. And for many of us, it might be the family we grew up in, the job we choose, the culture that, you know, religious or otherwise, different things that could influence who we choose to be as human beings. And like you said, it's all choice. It just, you know, you could grow up in a very conservative environment and still choose to travel the world, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. I know. And I also believe that we on some level choose our parents. So we as little souls look down and we're like, well, that looks interesting. I guess I'll be a part of that family. So I also don't think we're victims, but I get the same thing. I was just getting like firewood at a gas station near my house a couple of nights ago. And the gas attendant is super sweet and talkative. And he was going on and asking me if I cooked. And I was like, I actually haven't cooked in a year and a half because my business has been so busy. But the last month I've started to kind of make space to cook again and learning. I like Google how long to like boil spinach for because I don't even know that. And he was saying to me like, you know, you just need to like, you know, you're a good looking girl and you just need to learn how to cook and you'll land a nice man. And I just like looked at him and I was like, I'm a motherfucking boss and I own my own business. I would like to learn how to cook, but like, don't tell me that my worth and my value is to be a housewife, because I feel like so many of us, I feel like it's, well, like I have liberal people in my life and have grown up in that. So I don't see the whole gender piece as much right in front of my face. But yeah, there are moments like that where you're like, what? Like, how are you still telling women that they need to be good cooks to succeed in this world? Like, it's ludicrous.
I know. It's just mind-blowing that we treat these boxes. I think this is where it becomes dangerous to our success in anything. Our success in happiness, joy, fulfillment, career, or otherwise is believing that the boxes are there. Like, the minute that you say, oh, absolutely, you're right. If I don't learn to cook, I will never land a man, and therefore I will live, you know, the rest of my days as a spinster. And I think that if you treat that as true, just the same way many of us out there in our careers, we say, oh, that person, Jan, can go out and be a poet, but I'm not worth it, or I suck, and my dad once told me I wasn't very good at it, and I could never do that. And if you treat that statement as true, you've just basically imprisoned yourself in a box that you have a key to, and you're choosing not to get out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so true. And I hear that a lot. I hear, you know, I post pictures of myself surfing in Costa Rica and doing all of these things. And people are like, okay, she's a trust fund baby. She's got a, you know, someone supporting her. I'm like, actually grew up on welfare, busted my ass to make my own business myself. And I hear, you know, it's because I'm pretty, and there's all kinds of stuff that gets thrown around. And I think that our ability to to go out and, you know, what, and, you know, what is it? Because we all have, you know, I meet people in the water who are like, you know, they do different things or who have ideas, and they're, for them, it's just like so unrealistic. And I'm always there being like, totally, like, don't make the movie. Of course, people are going to love that. Like, you should absolutely do that. Cause I, you know, I have crazy ideas all the time and they manifest and they happen. I was surfing one day and, that was probably a year ago, and I was like, you know, it's cool making money off my writing, but like, I'm really in love with surfing, and like, wouldn't it be cool if someone gave me money to do something in surfing? And like, that night I walked into a yoga studio in Encinitas, California, and my friend was like, hey, this company is looking for like a female business owner to feature in their like surf video, are you interested? And I was like, yeah. And then a woman contacted me from Australia who is making this documentary called Surf the Wild Woman. And she was featuring like surfers on this, and there's a, for the trailer, and there's a whole movie she's getting funding for, but she's like, I want to feature you. And I was like, yeah. And so like, I really believe that we are all energy, and, you know, people think that it's woo woo and like, you know, manifestation and creation, but it's fucking science. It's like, if we put ourselves and, you know, we can't have doubt. There also is a piece of, we have to believe it, because we can have something and go, I want $1 million, but then in our back of our minds be like, I'm never going to create that. And so, or like, I want to, you know, start a music festival. But if we're like, I could never do that, then that doubt gets in the way of manifestation and creation. And we're not actually going to achieve it and succeed in it. And there's active parts of manifestation as well as just believing in ourselves deeply enough to see it into existence.
Yeah, I think that we all have, I don't know if you've ever done any personal development work at all, but I know I spent the last 10 or 12 years of just undoing that negative voice in our head that says, you suck, you can't, you screwed up that one time in high school or junior high or whatever it was, and therefore you're going to fail. And I feel like if we treat those voices as true, those doubts, those uncertainties, it's kind of like a cancer. It just grows in our brain until it takes over our body and soul, and then we find ourselves in a mindless job that we hate doing, being resentful towards our boss, our spouse, our family members for not putting us in a better position. But it's like you said, the moment that you take the reins, it's like you have these wild horses running your brain, and they're just like these animals going off in any which direction. And yet the funny thing is, we're sitting in the driver's seat, but most of us never actually pick up the reins to our consciousness. And the moment we pick up the reins and we direct those horses, which are the equivalent of our free will, we've then gotten the capacity to direct our thoughts. And like you said, to begin to manifest and empirically validate the things that we desire most.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So true. Yeah. I've had about 10 years since I was, or maybe like 9 years. I've been in self-growth courses and worked with the same coach for about 8 years and hired other people to work with. And I 100% believe, and I also love Louise L. Hay's work. I'm not sure if you're familiar, but she recently passed away. She was like she's a matriarch, and I believe so deeply that our thoughts and beliefs affect not only our ability to go out into this world and, you know, light this world on fire with whatever we're passionate about, but I also do believe that if we're constantly living in a state of negativity, that those thoughts and emotions manifest as dis-ease in our body from everything from, you know, cancer to a yeast infection. So I think that as far as everything from motivation and, you know, going out and achieving to our health and well-being, it's 100% governed by how we govern our thoughts.
Yeah, completely. I love Louise Hay. You know, her, what was it? You Can Heal Your Life, or one of her books was, you know, instrumental in looking at yourself. And I know some listeners out there, not everybody is going to agree with this. Some might say, you know, Jan and Jennifer are crazy. You know, we want science. I want empirical evidence. And I think that the thing that frightens people the most, like I remember when I was just telling one of the girls who works with me about this, you know, when I first started wanting to make like $100,000, it was just a passion. It was a dream. I was like, oh my gosh, if I could make $100,000 when I was 24, 25, that's like a bajillion dollars to a 24-year-old. And I remember just visualizing it, seeing it, tasting it, wanting it. And then that year I made 100. And then I was like, oh, okay, what if I started just saying I'm going to make 100? And then the next year I said 150, and then I made 160. And then I started training people around me. And then I was like, okay, well, heck, if I can just say whatever I want to make, then why the heck not just say $250,000? And that next year I made $275,000. And Jan, I kid you not, I stopped manifesting for 4 years after that because I wasn't afraid of failing. My biggest fear was that I was successful beyond my greatest imagination, and that I was the one solely accountable for that success. And it took me 4 years of reflection and meditation to be able to take the reins to that again, to be able to go, wow, what if I really could direct having whatever I wanted? And then book happened and radio show, just like you, you know, many things.
Mm-hmm. It's so amazing. I've actually written, I have done similar work with money and, you know, written down at one point when I was really in scarcity starting my career. And I was like, you know, I was so stoked. I remember I got like a $50 check to like write someone's bio. And I was like, yes. And then people paid me to like write articles of like $100. And I was just barely surviving. I think I was making like 600 or $1,000 a month off my writing. And I met this woman who said, Yana, like, you only need yourself. Go write down a number on a piece of paper, or whatever, it's an annual number, and just like, just focus on that and believe in that. And I remember it was $4,000 a month. It was like $46,000 a year. And I, within 2 weeks, was making $4,000 a month. And I also had, I did my taxes. I like waited 2 years. I remember it was exactly $46,000. And then I made over $100,000 the following year. So I definitely play with money and energy and believe that, yeah, it's all like, I think that we don't believe it until it happens to us, because knowledge is secondhand experience and wisdom is experience. And it can sound like woo-woo bullshit until you're like, whoa, that actually happened.
Yeah, it's like astounding. I remember when I created every 5 years, I kind of set my intentions, like if I had everything go my way, how would my life look? And in 2015, I wrote my last five-year plan, and end of last year in 2016, all of a sudden I looked at my life and I looked back at the five-year plan I'd written the year before, and it said 1 year from then I would have opened a second office, I would have a beach house, which I had always wanted, and all these things, and a radio or TV show. And then I was like, oh my God, this is exactly verbatim what I said would happen a year ago in 2015. And it's playing with that power. But the one thing I want to touch on and ask your opinion on as well is, I don't want anybody listening out there to think that it's all magic and fairy dust, because there is work that goes into it, just in the same way you have to control your thoughts. Is, I don't know about you, but I still am a human being. And there are moments where I catch myself going, you know what, Jen, I can't do it. I'm just not good enough to be the world leader I want to be, or whatever it might be. But then it's, for me at least, immediately catching that thought and replacing it with something that empowers rather than disempowers me. So it's not that you or I perhaps don't have doubts or uncertainties. It's just kind of catching yourself and not giving the power over to them. What do you do in those circumstances?
Yeah, so I've done a lot of, you know, I talked a little bit about, you know, we choose our families and our things. I chose, and I think like a spiritual level, to have the gift of two gay moms and a beautiful, loving family, but a father that chose not to be active. We actually just, I found him 7 years ago, and we've recently rekindled a relationship, which is so beautiful and healing for me. But for a large walk of my childhood and adult life, you know, as a kid, we decide things about ourselves and the things people do, and we make it about us. And so my big thing was not feeling worthy. So it was like, okay, I don't feel worthy of anything really, whether it was like love or money or opportunities. I remember I had a job offer from Vogue, like 2 weeks after I launched my website. I was like, I want a public speaking gig. And then like Vogue emailed me, and I was like, oh my God, I meant like, you know, like a small, like Jesus fucking Christ. And so I, but even that, then there was this whole process of like, you know, am I worthy to work in a company like Vogue, or am I worthy of taking this money, even though this client is like, will you have me, you know, will you please work with me? And, or in love, you know, like whatever it may be. And so there are abso-fucking-lutely insecurities that show up. And often it's that whole question of, who am I? You know, am I even qualified to do this? Like, do I deserve this? You know, is this, and the same time, we applaud people that are like self-depreciating and struggle and like humbleness is not right, but it's like we really associate and find connectedness to what we are in. And a lot of us are in a space of struggle. So it's like, I think that also what I see as a writer is a lot of, and on social media and Instagram, is like a lot of people talk about the struggle side. And I did for years. I would say that I talked about my struggle. I was this like broke poet living in the cabin in the woods with $60 to my name. And, you know, I had $60 one day. So I rented my bed out on Airbnb and people are like, yeah, like fuck the system. And they love that stuff. Cause it is great. And I wonder, you know, there's so much like, you know, do we connect with something as much if it didn't come from a place of struggle? And like, what is wrong with somebody having a parent who had money who also said like, here, go get this. Like, why do we have to struggle? Why are we like, well, they struggled, so it's okay to earn success. I'm like, what's the psychology behind that? But yeah, so anyway, back to insecurities and absolutely shows up all the time. You know, I think the beliefs and insecurities, you know, those like whack-a-mole machines,
Those
pop-ups. It's like, I feel like I'll go to like a self-growth course and like punch pillows and scream at people and like write things out and do visualizations. And I'll be like, I've got my motherfucking belief in a bag. Like I am worthy. Bah, bah, bah. And I'll go out and kill it and life will be awesome. And then like one day, oof, it like shows up like that whack-a-mole and you're like, ah, like, what are you doing here? I've not only spent like $10,000 and done the work and punched the pillows, but like, why are you still here? We made peace. And so I think that, you know, for me, that's constant, you know, it's a constant peace. And it's so beautiful because it's what I've chosen to learn about. And I know we all have our things. And I guess what we've chosen to learn and to be part of. And one of my beautiful friends, Mark Grove, said something that I loved. It was like, you know, we're all going to have our wounds and the realities of whether it was a parent who didn't really believe in us or cheer for us or who was working so much they never came to our basketball practice, which made us feel like we weren't supported. And, you know, walking through this life, we always feel a little bit shaky that, you know, we're not supported or people that we love don't believe in us. And whether it's that we've chosen to have that relationship with that parent in this life, it's like, it's almost like a belief or a wound. Like we have broke our leg and we will walk through this life knowing that we have broken our leg and that happened absolutely. And that is part of our reality. And it's not that it ever really goes away. You know, I will always have this piece of like the reality that my dad wasn't there in my life as a kid. And, I do control how I walk through this world. So it's like, yeah, I broke my leg. There's a scar. Check it out. Sometimes the whack-a-mole pops up and, you know, then I love it. And I go, shit, you're still here. Hey, okay, cool. Well, I'm going to like love you and hold space for you and not judge you or beat myself up because it's been 10 years, but just have empathy and compassion that like, how cool that in this life I get to learn about this. And as a writer, how cool that I get to talk about it because, you know, unworthiness and insecurity and not being good enough are human struggles and characteristics that we all deal with no matter what we're doing. I think that maybe that's a blanket statement. I would say a lot of us have moments of that. And to be able to speak to it, you know, I'm learning to play guitar and I can't say that I'm a slayer at music and singing, but it's like how beautiful that I do encompass the talent and the words to speak to that and share that slab of my heart with this world. So.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I think you hit on some super important points. It's just about looking at what the lesson is in that moment. The whack-a-mole thing is going to visually stick with me. That is brilliant. That is how it feels. It's like, it's not just a whack-a-mole. It's like a whack-a-gremlin. It's like that whack-a, like little nasty little thing that pops its head out and maybe it starts to spin in circles like The Exorcist and you're just looking for your little whack-a-mole stick and you can't find it and all the tools that you have. But I think that it is important to realize that no matter how far you get in life, how successful you are, whether you're Tony Robbins or, you know, any other world leader, a positive thought leader, we all are human beings. And at the core of it, like you said, it's a blanket statement to say that, you know, we all have issues with unworthiness, et cetera. But I think to some extent, it is absolutely true and valid that as human beings, we're not perfect. I don't think I've met a single human being on the planet from any culture in any far reach of the world who has felt completely secure and authentic 100% of the time. But it's like you said, it's choice. It's going, oh, the whack-a-mole is coming up. I have a choice. I can choose to fight the whack-a-mole, try and struggle, pull it out, fight with it, play with it. Or I can just hit it on the head and go like, okay, thank you for reminding me about that lesson. And now I get to move through it instead of let it control you.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So true. I love that analogy. It's exactly what it feels like. You're just like, it's shocking. talking in those beautiful.
And I will tell you, though, the one thing that I think that is admirable and that I really loved when I read that first article that I think that you had written is the concept of your poem and the concept of your book. You know, this is for the women who don't give a fuck. And so my last question for you will be, how do you not give a fuck? At the end of the day, whack-a-moles, all of that aside, it really is an art form to not care enough to let it run your life, because I think looking good is so important to both men and women, and wanting to be socially accepted, accepted within your families. There was a great movie I just saw yesterday called The Big Sick. Have you heard of that one?
I've heard of it, but I have not watched it.
I highly recommend it. I mean, again, perfect example of like this comedian who already had some semblance of success on Silicon Valley. I forget his name, Kumail, I think. And it was a story about his life and how he grew up in Pakistan, and his family said, you must marry a Pakistani woman. And that's just how it's going to be, or you're going to be disowned. And he fell in love with a white woman. And it's the true story of he and his wife and how they met. And I think that, how do you say you don't give a fuck when your family is threatening to disown you, or when your wife or spouse says he or she'll leave you if you leave your good paying job? How do you not give a fuck in those situations?
Wow, there's so many pieces there. So number one, just to speak to the title of this book, it's funny because people that know me, you know, I've worked with nonprofits and gone and volunteered in rabies campaigns, and I'm constantly spending an hour counseling somebody in the ocean, or I probably give the most fucks on an empathetic, compassionate, like I'm a total empath. Like I'm constantly giving, I've been chosen out of a group of like 100 people in a self-growth course as like the best giver and the worst receiver. So, I'm amazing. I give so many fucks, and I love humans, and I really, really love connections. And, so it's interesting because in some ways, I have so much heart and I'm so hypersensitive that it's really hard being a writer and sharing and doing the things, because I am so sensitive and connected to the people around me. But yeah. I think the bottom line is that when we listen to the opinions and, you know, the demands or requests of this world and the societal shoulds and the people around us, our parents, we just abandon ourselves. You know, it's like there will always be people who will be telling us things. And it's almost as simple as like going into a restaurant and being like, or a coffee shop and being like, okay, I know that I like Americano with cream and honey. And someone's like, you know, you should really order the salted caramel. And someone comes up and they're like, no, you should get the mocha. And they're like, yeah, but you should have it with soy milk or almond milk. Or have you tried this? And it gets super overwhelming. And you're like, fuck, I know what I want. I want an Americano with like cream and honey. And so when we listen to the people around us in this world, we step out of alignment with ourselves and our true desires, whether that's how we like our coffee, just to give it into perspective, or, you know, what we should do for a career, or, you know, any aspect. You know, I think how we do one thing is how we do all things. And that's why we feel so torn up when there's one part of our life that's, you know, not in alignment. It's why when we're going on a date with someone we're not super into and we see someone we know, we're like, oh, and we feel weird. It's like, we know that person is not authentic to us and who we are. And, or a job. It's like, you can tell by my friend, Allie, this amazing photographer, and she has this sparkle in her eyes, because when you love what you do, you fucking shine, because you're in alignment and you're being true to yourself. And it's like this amazing superpower that everyone can access. And she was going dress shopping yesterday and some woman was like, are you famous? You look famous. just because she's got this like sparkle, and she's an amazing photographer, but she's like, no, I'm not famous. I just, you know, I love what I do. And so I think that it's funny because it's actually a disservice to everyone around us when we don't do what we love and step into who we are. And so I think that to not give a fuck about what everyone says is to walk into that coffee shop, and whether it is the man or the woman that we love or the job that we want or the place that we want to live, to go like, I choose that, you know? I don't care if you want me to have a salted caramel latte. My milk is bullshit. I hate it. It's not the right consistency or color in my coffee, and I want full milk, bitches. And so it's just staying true to who we are and just, you know, being at peace with that. Cause I think when we are who we are, we heal this world. People that are angry or irritated or guilty or stressed, or, you know, then it starts they start to have addictions and they step into avoidancies. And, you know, it's just so good for us and for everyone around us. You know, even if in moments it feels not loving, if you stay in a marriage that isn't true to you anymore, you're not doing that person any kind of service, because they would be so much better off having someone who thinks they're a fuck yes, love them. And if you're staying in this job just because you're good at it and you feel bad, you don't want to quit because of your boss, like, what about like Ashley out there who like would kill for your position and your job and who would like rock at it and it would be true to her, so she would actually be better at it. Yeah. And even with our parents will get over it. My friend, when I was in Thailand, or we went to Thailand when I was 18, and my friend that I went traveling with, her parents were like, if you go to Thailand, we're kicking you out of the house. Because wow. They were like, go somewhere safer. And you know, and she was like, no, I'm going to go and explore and see the world. And they didn't kick her out of the house. But I think we have to lay down the law and be true to ourselves. And that in the same breath of air will eventually be seen by those around us that it is loving. And so I think not giving a fuck for me is, you know, the whole book is, it's not about not giving a fuck or giving a fuck. It's just about not conforming to anything other than exactly who you are and walking in this world and knowing that there is absolute space for you with a confident fire to exist in whatever capacity you need to. And it's healed me. And that's why I write about it and talk about it. And people might look at the book and say, I'm a self-absorbed millennial that's probably like littering and, you know, has like having sex with six guys and like putting fuck over the churches and like, no, that's not what it's about at all. But, yeah. But you know, that's what it means to me. And, I hope that summarizes it.
That's amazing though. Jan, I am so happy we've had the chance to have you on the show. It's such an incredible journey that you've been on. And just, I think it's a great lesson for all of us. How can we be more true to ourselves and give up any fucks, you know, and just, I actually had a guy one time. It was the guy from, have you ever heard of the band Florida Georgia Line? Do you know them? I'm not a big country person, but anyways.
I'm not country at all. No.
Yeah. One of the guys in the band, my friend was interviewing him for a show or an article she was writing. And we had this great talk and I gave him this little book that I carry with me sometimes that has positive energy. And he handed me a business card and I still have on it. And I could see you handing these out too. And all it has printed on it is no fucks given. He just like hands them out when he likes somebody. You know, he's like, hey, you here you go. And it just, you know, I remember just getting such a kick out of that, because in a world where we give so many, you know, fucks, it's liberating just to be like, hey, let today be the day where you just let it go. You live your life and you do you. So Jan, so great to have you on the show. Where can our listeners find you? Where can they find the book? Tell us a little bit more about that.
Absolutely. And my name is so hard. It's pronounced Yana. It looks like Jan, but if you're, my website is that.
That's okay. So funny. Sorry about that.
I don't think you said it wrong. First, I think you said it good. It's it looks like Jane. I would always in school, the teacher would like pause and be like, how do I pronounce this? So to find the easiest place is my website, which is JANNERobinson.com. My book is being published through Thought Catalog, and the link to it's on my website. I write stuff on social media every day. Sometimes it's just photos of me surfing and being in joy and in life, and sometimes it's poems and sometimes it's personal essays. But yeah, my book is going to be the official place to see the collection of some poems I've written. I probably have like 1,000, but this is like about 180 pages of my work. And I'm so excited. I'm also going to have a little film release with that, which is going to be like a spoken word video with surfing and women and a poem and some music. And those will all be coming out in like 2 weeks.
Oh my gosh. Congratulations on everything. We are going to have to stay in touch and follow what's happening with you. And thank you so much to all of our listeners out there. Wishing everybody a very happy Thanksgiving. Just remember, if you missed any portion of the show or you want to listen to it again, you can find it immediately following the show for download on the LA Talk Radio website, or later in the week, it will be available on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. We invite you to subscribe, rate us, leave us any comments you might have, or interact with us on our Get Yourself the Job Facebook page as well. Thank you, Jan, and have a wonderful day, everybody, and happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks for having me, Jen.
Take care. Have a good one.
Bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.